නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ So we were discussing previously on a sutta which is actually a series of suttas which are talking on some deep aspects of non-self and how an arahant would face his final passing away. So likewise, so we have spent some time discussing these somewhat philosophical as well as practice related suttas. So I thought of taking a different sutta for some time, and which is somewhat a long sutta and which is available in the Sutta Nipata. Actually, the Sutta Nipata is one of the Kuddaka Nikaya books, the shorter discourses. And interesting point is, it is believed that these suttas are delivered by the Buddha in his early Buddhahood. Basically, say during his early 20 years, so there were no much established kind of Buddha Sasana, but again and again many people come to meet him and he deliver sermons, Dhamma discussions, and as a result of that they become monks or they become his followers. So likewise it's kind of an introduction of the Buddha's teaching, and that is how it evolved. And here this sutta comes under that category. So Sabhiya Sutta, it is called Sabhiya Sutta. Sabhiya is the name of an ascetic. So it's a wanderer ascetic, Paribhajaka. And he is a very intelligent person, and he has a kind of a connection with one of his past deity or past relative who is now actually a deity. And on one occasion that particular deity appeared and give a kind of a request or kind of a information to this Sabhiya, telling that whoever answering these questions, you better go forth under him. So basically this wandering ascetic has a deity, and that deity is a kind of an intelligent person, and again has some information, has some previous understanding, might have heard some Dhamma, and that Dhamma now he is teaching to Sabhiya and requesting Sabhiya to go forth, spend the spiritual life, the celibate life under that particular teacher. It's a kind of a way how a teacher can be selected in that time. So because many are respected, many are introduced as teachers, and therefore it is very difficult to recognize who is the real teacher. So this is one interesting situation, actually not only unique. Probably you can remember even Bahiya Darucirya. For him also this kind of a deity intercepted, and he intervened, and he also asked, inform that Bahiya Darucirya, that you are not an arahant, you haven't even in the path of the arahanthood, and that Buddha is the arahant, you better go and meet him. So that's a kind of an instruction given by a deity. Similarly here also one deity come to the picture, and he is informing this wandering ascetic Sabhiya that you better undergo your celibate life under a teacher who can answer these questions. And those questions are now taught to Sabhiya, and now Sabhiya is going to one teacher after another to ask these questions. Now during that time, Buddha's early time, actually Buddha is not old, Buddha is in his youth, and there are other teachers who are very well known, and they are very old also. So they are the Purana Kassapa, Makkali Gosala, Ajita Kesakambali, Pakuda Kachayana, Sanjay Bellattiputta, and Nigantanathaputta. So they are very old, very popular, very famous, and there are many followers, and they are the ones actually believed that arahants in the world, and therefore they are quite popular. And so this Sabi also went to these teachers so that he can ask these questions. So once he arrived, they actually didn't welcome the questions. So that's an interesting point. So when someone is going to ask questions, so they didn't really welcome questions, rather they prefer simply the followers to follow what they simply say. So the open discussion or inquiring is not that popular, and the teachers are not welcoming. And the same thing happened here. So when Sabiha went there and asked questions, so they didn't reply. Rather, they sometimes ask the questions from them, from Sabiha himself. And Sabiha also don't know the answers. And these teachers, Purna Kassapa, Nigantanatha Putta, so all of them get really not happy about this situation, and they even become angry. Now Sabiha is now in a problem, because they are the very well known teachers, spiritual teachers, believed by the folk, and now Sabi is going one after the other, so they are not answering the questions, but they become somewhat frustrated, they become angry, and then they are asking various questions from Sabi. Now Sabi got kind of disillusioned about the situation, and so he is having now displeasure about the whole spiritual paths, teachers. And he thought of, better I even disrobe. So I better leave this ascetic life, I better leave this wandering ascetic life, I better live a simple lay life, enjoying the sensual pleasures. So he, even to that level, he become really unhappy about what's going on. Anyway, at that moment, a thought occurred to him. So this venerable, the ascetic Gautama, So Buddha is known as a Samana. So this Samana Gautama is also now getting popular. He's also leading a group now. And he's also a teacher. And getting popular, and he's becoming well known and famous. Now, let me go and ask this question from him. So this is a thought occurred to Sabiya's mind. And when that thought occurred, on the other hand, he is thinking this... the other previous teachers are very old. So they also are very well established, and they have several, many followers. And when I went there to ask questions, so they all were not capable of answering these questions. So how would this young Samana Gautama would answer these questions? Because the previous ones are very, very old, they are very popular, and they are in their, say, advanced in life, very mature, quite aged, they are old. Even they can't answer these questions. So how come then young Gautama, who is getting popular only just now, he is not in old age, he is a very young person now. So how he is going to answer these questions? So that's another thought occurred to Sabiya. But anyway, another thought occurred to him. An ascetic should not be belittled or disparaged just because he is young. So this is another interesting point. Later actually Buddha in one discourse, he is saying that there are few people that we should not disparage thinking or be little thinking they are young. So examples are the prince, and another example is a young samana, young spiritual person, and another example is a little fire. Because when these things can are exposed, they can actually make a huge impact. Say, even though right now a small boy is a prince, so he may become a mighty king, so he has immense power then. So therefore we should not neglect a prince So that is one occasion. And then a little fire. So we should not neglect a little fire. So this little fire can grow and become a huge bushfire, and it can be a complete disaster. So therefore, a little fire should not be neglected. And another example is given, a little serpent. Even though the serpent is little, it can be venomous, or it can grow to a very venomous kind of serpent. And the other person is the young samana, a novice samana. So we should not neglect them, because they may have the potential to become a thorough, well-versed, well-established spiritual teacher or very spiritual person. So therefore, this is another thought occurred to Sabhiya. So I should not neglect Samana Gautama, thinking that he is young. Now he is actually, in a way, we can see how a person is logically reasoning out when he is going to take a decision, when he is going to meet a teacher. So what are the different thoughts happening in one's mind? So one may actually think about the current situation, current popularity. So many followers, they are in their old age, they have lived the celibate life for a long time. So these are the typical factors one would consider and think that they are the best teachers. I better go and ask questions. On the other hand, this Sabhiya revolutionary think that I should not neglect, I should not be little, an ascetic, thinking that he is a young. Now, by convincing himself, now he is going to ask questions from the Buddha. So he exchanged greetings, and actually at that time Buddha was living in the Rajagaha. So Rajagaha is the place where Buddha arrived first after his enlightenment. So this Bimbisara, King Bimbisara, is the one offered that bamboo grove, Veduvanarama. So that is where Buddha was residing. So Sabhiya arrived there, and now he is trying to ask the questions. Now anyway, by this time Sabhiya was fully frustrated, and he went through a very, very difficult time before arriving the Buddha. So he actually kind of plead answers now from the Buddha. Perplexed and full of doubt, I have come desiring to ask questions. Please put an end to them for me. Being asked questions by me in sequence, answer me in accordance with the Dhamma. Kanki vechikichi agama panhe punchitung abhikankamano tesanta karo bhavahi panhe me putto anupubbang anudhammang vyakarohimi. Now he honestly tells that I am coming fully perplexed. I am with lot of doubts now. I have gone even to the level that I am going to completely renounce this ascetic life. Even to that level I was frustrated, because whoever the teachers are not capable of answering these questions. So please give me an end to these questions. So please answer these questions. So we can see kind of a frustration which has developed within this Sabhiya. So even though he is keen on getting the answers, so no one was capable. So the so-called teachers, they become frustrated when he is asking questions, and they become not happy when he is asking questions. Now he is approaching Buddha and asking the same questions. Durato agato si sabhiya panhe puchitung abhikankamanu tesanta karo bhavami panhe te putto anupubbang anudhammang vyakaromi te. So now Buddha is answering, okay, no problem, you can ask whatever questions. So you have arrived desiring to ask questions. So I will put an end to them. So being asked questions in sequence, I'll answer you in accordance with the Dhamma. So Buddha positively and in a more relaxed manner So Buddha opened the session. So that indicates another situation where Buddha is open. It is not that Buddha introduced the teaching as kind of a dogmatic, unquestionable, belief-based system. Rather, his Dhamma is something verifiable. So one can live according to Dhamma. One can live according to Dhamma and then one can reach the benefits within this life. So it is something verifiable. It is not that one has to simply believe something and the results would be get available after the death. So those are the typical, mostly available teachings. So they don't allow questioning and the results are mostly after the death. So we have to simply believe. But the Buddha's teaching, on the other hand, is quite allowed to question, and once open it is shining, and again results are available within this life. So this is a very interesting difference that we can see other types of teachings and the Buddha's teachings. And when Buddha gave that kind of an open attitude, open occasion, so Sabbiya was very happy and he is quite elated, thinking, so what a wonderful thing happened now. Previously when I arrived, the other people, so they actually didn't even happy about answering questions or even asking questions. But now this ascetic Gotama has given full permission to ask questions. And he was so happy from that, even the opening up the session. So Buddha's open attitude, his readiness to answer questions. So this is a very interesting point. So when someone is arriving for asking questions, so if we are sort of not open and we are in a kind of a closed fist, so then it is very difficult to convince that person. So on the other hand, that person become even frustrated. And but here Buddha is showing his openness, his readiness to answer, and now with that motivation, now one after the other, Sabbiya is asking questions. Kim pattimahu bhikkhunam soratam kena katancha dantamahu buddhoti katam pauchyati putto me bhagava vyakarohi. Now he is asking questions fully onto the spiritual path about a monk, about a bhikkhu, about the Buddha, who is the Buddha, who is the enlightened person, who is a real monk, who is a person who is leading proper spiritual path. So these are the questions Sabbiya is asking. Now in a way these are giving some indications. So how we are supposed to say mold our lives. Now if we are trying to lead a spiritual life, so what are the areas that we can sort of pay attention? During the Buddha's time, what are the areas that people think which is more important, and the areas where we have to give more prominence if you are leading a spiritual life? But on the other hand, if one is leading a completely lay mundane, say sensuality related life, so this could be quite different. But here he is asking very direct questions about the spiritual path where one is following thoroughly, properly, honestly. So what are those qualities? What has he attained? The one they call a bhikkhu. So we are calling a bhikkhu. So what is his attainment? In what way is one gentle? And how do they call one tamed? So certain terms, sorata. Sorata means a gentle one. Danta. So that means a tamed one, a very well tamed person. And then who is the Buddha? The enlightened one, the fully enlightened one. And putto me bhagava vyakarohi. So please, when I am asking, so I am asking now, please answer. Now we'll see what are the answers that Buddha is giving. Pajjena katena attana parinibbana gato vitinna kanku. Vibhavancha bhavancha vipahaya usitava kina punabhavo sa bhikkhu. So the answer is in a way very, very concise, and the features highlighted there are very, very profound. Now this is very common feature in the Suttanipata. So all the answers are very concise. So Buddha's early days, so this is one unique feature we can recognize, where Buddha's answers are very, very concise in a way. And mostly in the Suttanipata, most of the suttas collected are in the verse. So asking questions, maybe answers, dialogue. So there are many verses involved in the Suttanipata. Now probably you might have heard Mangala Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta. So all these are suttas available in the Suttanipata, and they are in the verse, a series of verses. Now here also, Buddha put everything together and in this kind of format, he is answering the question. Not in a typical sentence form, but in a verse. So the answer Buddha is giving, Pajjena Katena Attana. So by himself, so he has practiced the path. And he has attained Nibbana, cross over doubts. Parinibbana gato vitinna kankho. So kankha. Kankha means doubts. So vitinna means, so he has crossed all the doubts. So he has no more doubts. Vibhavancha bhavancha vipahaya. So he has abandoned non-existence as well as existence. Usitava. So that means he has lived the holy life, lived the spiritual life. Kina punabhava. Now he has completely finished the renewed existence, the punabhava, again and again coming into birth. Sabhikkhu. So he is a bhikkhu. So basically here, Buddha immediately refers the arahant. So you can see in the Suttanipata, most of the suttas are aimed at arahantship. And no more words about the Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami. So those information are actually slowly coming to the picture, coming to the Buddha's sermons as he continues his teacher, or as he continues his leadership as a spiritual teacher. And then actually many, many followers are coming and becoming interested in Dhamma, and some of them become monks, nuns, and their capacities are different. So now Buddha actually giving more explanations about the non-returners, once-returners, stream enterers. But in the Suttanipata, so the people who are very much coming and meeting the Buddha are fairly potential, are with lot of potential, and most of them are becoming arahants. So therefore, all the suttas are aimed at arahantship in the Suttanipata. And they are very concise. The gist of the Dhamma is there. And Buddha doesn't give a very detailed explanations. So these very potential people are capable of understanding the teaching in a more detailed manner. Even though Buddha's teaching is very concise, so the listeners are capable of understanding it. So that indicates the potential of those people who arrived the Buddha during his early Buddhahood. Say first 20 years. So the people who are coming and asking questions and going to become monks, so they are very, very intelligent and spiritual people. So that is why they are aimed at directly to the arahantship, nothing else. So no much in between. And mostly they are very much interested in achieving the full enlightenment. So therefore Buddha's answer is also in line with that. So Buddha is mentioning Pajjena katena attana parinibbana gato vitinna kankho. So he has practiced by himself and then attained Nibbana, and now there are no doubts. Vibhavancha bhavancha vipahaya. Now he has abandoned the non-existence and existence and completed the holy life, completed the spiritual life, and there is no more renewed existence. So he is the bhikkhu. Now here, existence and non-existence, vibhavancha bhavancha vipahaya. So these are certain areas that we can pay little attention. So vibhavancha bhavancha. Now bhavancha, we can say, indicates some amount of sassatavada, thinking that there is a self and that self is continuing again and again to many, many existences. There is a lasting self, everlasting self. And on the other hand, non-existence, we can say it is more into the Uccedavada. So there is a self, but that self destroys, get destroyed just the passing away of this life. Or there is an understood self, but that self is not available now. So likewise, a self view in many different ways, one can think, one can try to proliferate. So based on that self view, one can get into this bhava and vibhava. And both are now abandoned in this particular bhikkhu, because he understood in deep sense the non-self. So as we discussed last time, so that what's that name, the previous sutta?
I have it here. Was it the Aladugana?
No, that is different one. Alagadugam Sutta, we discussed some time back. Yamaka Sutta. So in the Yamaka Sutta also, probably you can remember, so Venerable Yamaka also had that kind of a pernicious view, where thinking that there is a person, there is an individual, so that that person has become enlightened now. So as a result of that, he perishes, he destroys after the passing away. So that indicates the underneath the self-view that typically one can have. So that underneath self-view completely abandoned. So existence of a person, existence of a personality, existence of a self, or the non-existence of a self are two extremes that are abandoned. So one might ask, so why we can't say non-existence of a self? So if there is no self, then why can't we say there is no self, non-existence of a self? Actually, when we are talking non-existence of a self, so we may have a certain amount of underneath self-view. And on the other hand, rather than get into the two extremes, there is self is one extreme, there is no self is another extreme. So instead of taking both sides, both extremes, Buddha is putting his Dhamma in the middle, as indicated in the Kacchanagotta Sutta. Sabbang attitiko kacchanayam ekoanto, sabbang nattiti ayam dutiyanto. Everything exists is one extreme. Everything does not exist is another extreme. So without getting to any of these extremes, so Buddha is teaching Dhamma in the middle. So that is the Dhamma talking on to the dependent origination. Imasmin sati idang hoti, imas uppada idang uppajjati, imasmin asati idang nohoti, imas nirodha idang nirujjati. So that is the kind of noble principle that Buddha is putting. So when one condition is available, it conditions another. As the arising of that, another also can arise. With the unavailability of that condition, the result is not available. So the passing away of that condition causes the passing away of the result. So basically, putting in that form, so Buddha is giving his Dhamma from a different perspective, from a different way. Now, when one's mind is occupied with ignorance, so it can generate a lot of speculations, it can generate a lot of thoughts, proliferations, formations, fabrications, and mind get entangled, and there's a possibility of feeling a sense of I. The continuity is there, the various conditions are there, ignorance is there. So as a result of that, he may feel, I am available, I am existing, I am living. So that sense of I can happen, but it's a kind of a conditioning available in the mind. So that is why we need to understand, so rather than thinking kind of nihilistic way, so this is something one is understanding, okay, this I, a name, a label, a convention. So all these are in a way some convenient way of communication. Later we are sticking these labels so that we can communicate with others, but there is no anything substantial. There is no any inner core. There is no inner permanent existing self. Rather, when things are sort of conditioned, so it appears like a kind of a solid, compact thing, and we give it a name. So likewise, when one becomes an arahant, so here also it is mentioned, abandon, non-existence and existence. And now we can go to the next one. Sabbatta upekkako satima naso hinsati kanchi sabba loke tinno samano anavido ussada yassa na santi sorato so. Now each term has many different ways of spiritual life, or we can say many different aspects of spiritual life is highlighted in each term. Sabbatta upekkako, so he is equanimous towards everything. And then satima, and he is mindful. Naso hinsati kanchi sabba loke, and who is not injuring or who is not harming anyone in the whole world. So he is very, in a way, leading a very spiritual life, and he does not harm anyone. Naso hinsati kanchi sabba loke tinno samano anavilo. So he has crossed over, unsullied, and his mind is completely purified, anavilo. Ussada yassa na santi sorato. Ussada yassa na santi. So there is no any kind of swellings. And sorato, and he is gentle. Now you can see certain aspects that highlighted here in this verse is very, very interesting. And Dosa put it in a more concise manner. So equanimous. Sabbatta upekkako. So upekkha, equanimity, has many different forms. Now, if we consider some other point of view, one can say, okay, you are developing upekkha, equanimity, using jhanas. Say one can attain different absorptions, and while being there, particularly in the fourth jhana, so you are sort of endowed with a supreme form of upekkha, equanimity. So that is one way. On the other hand, one can say, you are equanimous, trying to be equanimous when one is blaming, when one is praising. So you are trying to maintain an equanimous mind. So that is another way. And on the other hand, if we consider from the vipassana point of view, one can say, so you have seen the impermanent nature of all different formations. They are unsatisfactory nature. They are non-suffering nature, and they are non-self nature. So as a result of that, so you become equanimous to all different formations. In a way, what we call as the sankharupekkha. So that is the most deepest one in a way. And on the other hand, when one becomes an arahant, so his mind may be naturally equanimous because he has realized the situation, penetrated the whole situation, so he is maybe totally equanimous. And sometimes in the Dhamma, it is called kind of Shadangupekha. So with respect to sight, he can maintain equanimity. With respect to sounds, he can maintain equanimity. With respect to odors, he can maintain equanimity. With respect to tastes, he can maintain equanimity. With respect to tangibles, he can maintain equanimity. And even with respect to certain many mental objects, he can maintain equanimity. So that means equanimity is something that he has now consolidated. So the equanimity is therefore considered as one of the mature form of spiritual quality. So typically when we are starting our spiritual life, since things are difficult, so we may not have much pleasure, any kind of happiness, so we may get frustrated and we are not sure about what we are doing and lot of doubts, and if we are trying to meditate, the body does not give it support, so there are a lot of aches and pains. Therefore, one would not have any kind of happiness at the beginning of one's spiritual life. But if one is continuing that with lot of effort, slowly, so mind can become somewhat concentrated, collected, hindrances can become somewhat abandoned temporarily. So as a result of that, some amount of joy may arise. A little bit of bliss arise, a little bit of rapture arise. Now one get sort of motivated. One is now eager to meditate. Now one is now searching more about the spiritual life. Because he gets some fruits, and those fruits are very, very encouraging. Those fruits are very, very interesting. And those fruits are really blissful. And as a result of that blissful state, so he is now geared to meditate, geared to spend spiritual life. And probably it may even grow. So he get more blissful, more elated. So that also can happen. Anyway, if he is continuing proper path, so that his mind may turn towards the understanding. And according to the Buddha's teaching, understanding of the reality, understanding of the true nature of all conditioned phenomena, what we call as a yathabhuta jnana dasana, knowing things as they truly are. So actually, if that is developed, so now rather than mind become blissful, now it can become dispassionate. Now the mind is getting more matured. Now the previous pleasant, blissful type of attitude is now turning into a different form. Now it is somewhat dispassionate, ready to go, ready to let go, abandon things, not holding things, not grasping things. Now slowly pave the way to the equanimity. So more and more he is capable of abandoning things, abandoning various graspings. So the non-grasping mind fairly is considered as equanimous. Etan santang, etan panitang, yadidang upekha. So it is sublime. And it is peaceful. And that is equanimous. So therefore Buddha encouraged to dwell in that equanimity. And now, here in this verse, Buddha mentioned sabbatta upekkhako. So everywhere he is maintaining that equanimity. Sabbatta upekkhako. So now in order to do that, so the mindfulness has to be consistent, satima. So therefore it is going hand in hand. So one has to be continuously mindful, then only one can maintain this equanimity. Equanimous toward everything. Mindful. Naso hinsati kanchi sabba loki. And so he does not injure, he does not harm anyone in the whole world. He is maintaining a very innocent life, non-harming life. And tinno samano anavilo. So tinno. So he has crossed over. So basically in the previous verse also we understood that he is no more having future existence, no more rebirths. And he has crossed over. So we can, many different ways we can interpret this, crossing over, crossing the flood. And various different defilements, form of defilements, now he has crossed over. And his mind become completely anavido, so that means purified. So there is no any mud, there is no any kind of stains, fetters. So his mind has become completely purified, anavido, unsullied. And ussada yassana santi, that means there is no swellings in the mind. Now this I think we discussed even in a previous occasion. So why this ussada, swellings happening in the mind? It is very much like ripples. So typically there is one interesting sutta called Tuvataka Sutta. There also very beautiful verse comes. Majje yatha samuddassa umino jayati titho hoti evang titho anejassa ussadam bhikkhuna kareya kohinchi. So there also the term ussada is highlighted, and interestingly there Buddha is giving a simile. That simile is actually the great ocean. Buddha mentioned even though many ripples or waves, turbulence is available at the beach, so as you go to the deep sea, there is no such turbulence. There is no such ripples, waves. Majje yatha samuddassa umino jayati. There are no waves, no ripples, but very calm, peaceful, but deep. Evang tito anejassa. And likewise, the person who is completely stilled, maintaining an unwavering mind, anejassa, ussadam bhikkhuna kareya kohinchi. And for that person, there is no up and downs, there are no ripples in the mind, there are no swellings in the mind. So he is maintaining the perfect equanimity in a way. So no swellings. So typically what happens is, when someone prays, so we go, we get up, we boosted up, the self-view encouraged. So you become a so-called a special person, VIP. But when someone is blaming, when someone is belittling, condemning, you get depressed. So there's a person in this experience, and that person become sort of elated, or this person become depressed. But when one is penetrated that, so when there is no such personality view, so then even when one is praising or blaming, criticizing, so his mind is free from all these swellings, free from all these ripples. And the last point Buddha highlighted here is sorato. So he is gentle. So here gentleness, actually we can interpret in different ways. So gentle in the sense he may be flexible. So arahant, one indication is that and flexibility. So he understood that, okay, these formations are quite vulnerable, subject to change. So as Bhante Dhammajiva sometimes highlight, so it's like water. So water can adjust according to the vessel. So it is not demanding any kind of fixed shape. Rather, when water is poured onto any particular vessel, so it takes the shape of the vessel. So likewise, Arahant's mind is fairly, in that sense, has the capacity to adjust to the situation. And that is one aspect typically explained. And on the other hand, his mind has become very sensitive. It is not that he become completely insensitive, indifferent, a gross kind of a mind. Rather, his mind is quite sensitive. But that sensitivity does not lead to kind of emotional wrecking or emotional cracking, because a thorough wisdom is also supporting. So the sensitivity is coupled with wisdom. And on the other hand, we can say his mind is gentle, so he has compassion. So he understood the whole situation, so he has more compassion towards the others because he understands. So others are in a kind of a mess, others are in a kind of a, entanglement, so they are helpless. Because he also was going through that turmoil, but now he is rid of that turmoil, completely free from that turmoil. But looking at the others, he can become more compassionate because he understands, okay, these people are fully entangled. These people are going through a lot of agony. These people are going through a lot of suffering. By seeing that, he can become more soft, more gentle, more compassionate. So, sorato. So, typically, Bodhi translated it as gentle. So, can connotate certain other meanings as well, as we can see. So, I think with that we can conclude today's sutta teaching session. So, this sutta actually has this kind of a nature. So, Buddha concisely include so many interesting qualities onto a verse and then it is presented. So, we'll get into a situation where certain other suttas also can support certain verses so that we can get a better understanding. And we'll see in the future how we can further discuss about this sutta. And with that, I'll conclude today's Dhamma sermon or sutta teaching. Now, if you have any questions or any points to discuss, I allow the session to now. Yeah. So there's a question from our side. Yeah, go ahead.
Sadhu, 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 your teaching. Thank you. I wonder if you could express a little more how we can develop equanimity with Vipassana.
Vipassana practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So basically, it may happen slowly. Now, one sense is that the objects typically given in Vipassana are also naturally quite equanimous. Say, breathing, for example, rising and falling, for example, and even the mindful walking. Now, these are not objects which are promoting or immediately giving us any sensual pleasures. They are quite equanimous objects, neutral objects. So, by associating them, also mind becomes somewhat equanimous. So, that is very early stage. That is one area. And on the other hand, as we develop a little bit of curiosity, the inquiring mind, onto these different phenomena, and now say if we are referring Vipassana more into the elements meditation, now the element characteristics are also quite equanimous. Say when you are referring the heat, the cold, may hardness, softness, roughness, smoothness, heaviness, lightness. So these are kind of qualities which it depends on how we interpret them. Typically they don't have any kind of happiness or sorrow included within. But how are we sort of approaching them? What is the mindset that we are maintaining while we are experiencing them? So typically when we are able to retrieve these different element characteristics, it also generate kind of an equanimity. And on the other hand, as we further continue, say these whatever the qualities, and you may understand, so they are impermanent and they are unsatisfactory and they are non-self. So that also lead to an equanimity, and sometimes it can lead to happiness also, because you are now getting some understanding about the Dhamma. So in Vipassana, so therefore the equanimity and sometimes the happiness can shift. But more and more, as you understand their true nature, so you become naturally equanimous. So the mind become more equanimous because you have no control. So you understand these phenomena have their own causes and conditions. According to those causes and conditions, actually the phenomena are changing. So you very much like withdrawing yourself. You allow things to happen. You let go of the things rather than interrupting the things. So rather than intervening the things, so you become more and more equanimous in that sense. So equanimity in that sense has different meanings. Now say for example, say assume that you are driving a cart, and that cart has a horse cart, and that cart has several horses, and all of them are properly, you know, dragging the cart. And what are you going to do? Nothing to do, I mean, because everything is happening smoothly, and you simply have to observe. So likewise, so there is a situation, there could be a situation where all the enlightened factors are very much aligned and everything is happening smoothly. So you have nothing to do. So in that sense, you are coming to the upekkha, what we call as the equanimity enlightenment factor, upekkha sambojjhanga. So that is the kind of the leading part. At the beginning, you become quite happy because things are, you know, in line, and things are, now you are understanding. So the Piti Sambojjhanga is there, Passadi Sambojjhanga is there, so you become quite a, you know, happy type of practice. But as you continue more and more, it turns into equanimity, because now things are happening smoothly, you have nothing to do, you don't need to interrupt. You allow things to happen and you accept things the way it is, or you are more and more accepting. So as a result of that, now it turns into equanimity. So as the last enlightenment factor, as the upekkha sambojjhanga. So that is where you become, go and, you know, stabilize yourself. So likewise, there's a kind of a smooth turns into equanimity as you continue the practice. So, and Buddha also encouraged that in the Indriya Bhavana Sutta, in the Majjhima Nikaya. So asking us to return back to equanimity. So when you are able to maintain a mind which is free from any attachment, free from any grasping, so its internal quality also equanimous. Say for example, now we just talk about the phenomena and we are observing their true nature. But as a result of that observation, when mind let go and maintain a free kind of mind, a relieved mind, so the most predominant quality of that relieved mind may be equanimity. So that is where the sankhara upekkha. Yeah, you understood the true nature of all the formations, so you now become equanimous about them. We are not going to interrupt them. We are not going to interfere them, because you understood their true nature. So they are beyond control. You can't control them. So you become more detached from them. As a result of that, your nature of the mind can be equanimous. So likewise, we can see mostly as we practice more and more. So Buddha mentioned the mature practice is more leading towards equanimity.
Thank you.
So it's you know, so you were talking about the samatha and vipassana kind of ways of equanimity. So, you know, someone would kind of still their mind with samatha, and it's like a temporary release.
Correct.
From hindrances, and then, you know, they get the equanimity from that.
Correct.
And then from there they would develop vipassana, you know, the insight. And so those two continuously building upon each other, more or less, that would lead into like more of a natural equanimity over time.
Mm-hmm.
Just to, like, you know, dispassion, that would kind of lead over time. You're continuously practicing the samatha, then the vipassana.
Mm-hmm.
Samatha, you know, to get some, at least temporary equanimity, and then the vipassana to get, you know, wisdom, and then that together, you know, kind of brings about more of a more dispassion, and then, you know, more equanimity, you know, just kind of like in everyday situations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we can say like that. So ultimately the vipassana may lead.
Mm-hmm.
So the vipassana, it will itself may take care of maintain the mind. So it may, so the samatha become very much an inbuilt characteristic, like, so it is not that you are now purposely developing samatha practice, rather, I mean, one can do that, but the vipassana itself is now, that understanding itself is now capable of maintaining equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can become very much established, so it can very much look after the mind. So that's why even here, say in this verse that Buddha mentioned, sabbatto upekkhako satima. So you become completely equanimous everywhere, and he's mindful. So the mindfulness will take care of kind of awareness of the mind, and he's fully aware of what's going on, and the support came from the insights, so that will take care of maintaining the equanimity.
Okay.
Kind of, you know, kind of a buffer, kind of a, say, shock absorber. So you are continuing your path, there are ups and downs, the mindfulness is to take care of what's really going on right now, you are always in the present moment, fully alert, and the shock absorber maintains the stability, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that samatha at the beginning may be necessary to, you know, to develop the mind to some extent, or to settle the mind to some extent, concentrate the mind to some extent, but with that, when you are developing vipassana, so it may couple with samatha in a more different way.
Mm-hmm.
It is not that the previous samatha that you practice earlier is not the same thing now you are practicing coupled with vipassana. Vipassana will pave the way for a different form of samatha.
Mm-hmm.
Not like you practice anapanasati and trying to, you know, develop a certain sign and absorb, and so that kind of samatha is one stage.
Mm-hmm.
But later, when mind more equipped with vipassana, more equipped with insight, so the maintenance of clarity of mind, maintenance of the stability of mind, so that has more support, more influence coming from the understanding.
Mm-hmm.
From the vipassana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, those are the questions we have from this side. We can allow the others to, yeah. Okay. Okay. So we
present the chat one.
We'll allow the ones who has raised their hands first.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe Priya.
Priya, you
yeah.
can.
Yeah.
Unmute your mic and talk.
Okay. Hold on.
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hold on, Bhante. There's something going. Bhante. My question is, you know, when we have a temporary relief, a released mind, even at that stage, are all five aggregates still operating?
Yeah, we can say so. All aggregates are operating, but we are not attached to them. We are not grasping them.
Oh, okay. So the equanimous state is a state of mind, but it's still kind of proliferation. Is that correct?
We can't say proliferation, by the way. So the proliferation requires fair amount of fabrications, fair amount of sankhara, and fair amount of ignorance. But when one's mind is released,
mm-hmm.
that means
mm-hmm.
no proliferation.
Okay, so that's what I got confused. So if there's no proliferation, it's only four of the aggregates are operating?
Thing is, sankhara has a deeper meaning, a broader meaning. So the proliferation
uh-huh.
is one gross level. Say that is the, we can say, a very gross level of formations is this sankhara, rather the mental
uh-huh.
proliferation, the prapancha. But even
yeah.
when prapancha is fairly subsided, you may have very subtle
uh-huh.
minor subtle thoughts, vitakka,
uh-huh.
yeah, maybe they are coming and going and not much disturbing. That is another level. And on the other hand, vedana and sanya are called the chitta sankhara.
Uh-huh.
Are called the chitta sankhara. They are the most subtle form of mano sankhara, we can say. When in consider the mental side, so the chitta sankhara, vedana and sanya, so they are the most subtlest form of the sankharas, and they become less and less now. They also become subsided, they also become calm, peaceful. So likewise, it's a gradual calming down. So, and the verbal sankhara, vachi sankhara, so the words are not there, you are not talking, the mind may be fairly free from inner chatter. And the vitakka vichara is the subtlest form, so that also can be fairly subsided. So as we are, one is continuing. And then the kaya sankhara, so the you are not working, you are not doing, you are not running, and this kind of bodily activities are all very much like stopped. And when the subtlest form is considered, that is the asasa passasa, that the in-breath and out-breath is the most subtlest form of the kaya sankhara. So even that can be more relaxed, more calm, more refined. So likewise, it's a gradual calming down of sankhara at many different levels.
I see. Okay. When I hear sankhara, I was referring only to mental proliferation, not the kaya sankhara or vachi sankhara. I mean, it's obvious that no vachi sankhara, but there are many, tiny vibrations and things are still going on. So, awareness is, Lokumadro said, evenly suspended, in everything. So that's why I got confused. I mean, I was thinking, because if there's no thought, so is five aggregates still operating? So I did not understand that kaya sankhara part.
Okay, actually not only kaya sankhara, vachi sankhara, chitta sankhara. So they are considered as the most subtlest form, the very, the fundamentals or blocks, or what we call building blocks of that gross form of sankhara. The refined, most refined form of sankhara, kaya sankhara, is the in-breath and out-breath. Most refined form of vachi sankhara is the vitakka and vichara. And the most refined form of mano sankhara, what we call it as chitta sankhara, and they are the vedana and sanya, feeling and perceptions. So they all are becoming, very, very refined now. It's a kind of a gradual calming down of the sankhara.
Okay. Yeah, probably all these are discussed in Mahasatipatthana Sutta we discussed, right? So maybe I have to go back and listen to them.
Actually, these different forms of sankhara to some extent are discussed in the Chula Vedala Sutta. Say, Chula Vedala Sutta, Venerable Arahat Dhammadinna, so she explains what is Chitta Sankhara, what is Vachi Sankhara, what is Kaya Sankhara. So she explained those there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
Everyone, Sanai.
Radhika, you can unmute the mic and talk.
Can't hear Radhika.
Okay, I am going to click that. Okay, you hear me now?
Yes, can hear.
Bhante, your talk today was very useful for me. Because I'm doing the Vipassana and the walking meditation. And I find that without doing anapanasati, even listening to a Dhamma talk, I get very, very calm, very quiet. Now, sometimes I have a lot of vibrations, but I was always associating that with the elements, and not with the kaya sankhara, but more with the elements. And with impermanence, because sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not there, sometimes it's very pronounced. Right now, during your talk, I had it almost continuously, but sometimes it's very, very subtle. I feel it only on my feet, the sole of my feet, and on the foot. Very, very subtle, and I'm fairly equanimous about it because I have got used to it being changing. So I've been associating that with the Dhatu Guna, and I don't know whether it's the air element or what it is, but I assumed it was one of the elements. And over overall, it's been making me calm, but I can see that I am going from blame, and when someone praises, that I'm happy and I'm unhappy. I can see that. So I'm not equanimous when that happens, but I am very fairly equanimous without doing anapanasati when I'm getting these, when I'm still, I'm not when I'm walking. Sometimes when I'm walking itself, I don't get it. But after 2 hours of walking, I'm talking when I'm still, I will feel that way. So I want to, the question I have is, I understand that I don't really have to do anapanasati to become calm. I can do walking, and then when I'm still, I can be calm. Or if I listen to a Dhamma talk, I can be calm. Sometimes I get so calm, I fall asleep. That happens more if it is not in English and I don't understand it properly. Because I can see the thoughts. There are no thoughts. There is very little movement. And then I'm falling asleep. But what I'm really concerned about is the fact that sometimes when I'm blamed, I lose confidence. And I can see that I'm losing confidence in certain, in myself. Not that I lose confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. I lose confidence in myself. And then I'm questioning myself, oh, am I doing it correctly? Should I be going to anapanasati? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? So what can you tell to help me about... I read a book from a Western monk following the Thai tradition who used the word that self-confidence is required for strong samadhi. And I'm talking vipassana samadhi. I'm not talking the samadhi of the fourth jhana from samatha. And I'm oscillating between these two. Confidence sometimes and very little confidence in my practice at some times. Please can you tell me what I should be doing to improve this? Thank you.
Yeah. I think you slowly may become confident. So, I mean, till we, as you correctly mentioned, till we are getting sort of confident about our practice, so our confidence may vary. So the overall, our practice itself is the one giving us more confidence, giving us more assurance, and giving us the proper direction. Okay, I am in the proper path. I am practicing really well. The practice has taken care of, and I can quickly recover. Even though sometimes the mind go or jumps to the up or the down, I can quickly come back, quickly establish myself. So likewise, practically, as you are sort of experiencing that kind of a maturity in the mind, then you become more and more confident because you understand, okay, now there is a stability in the mind. So ups and downs in the life is inevitable, but when you are going through them, you can quickly recover. You can quickly come back to your normal position, home position. So therefore, all these difficulties or all these, disturbances, or all these obstacles also in a way help us to develop that capacity. How can we quickly recover? How can we quickly establish ourselves in the equanimous state? And as you are doing that, based upon your typical daily activities, typical daily encounters, and then you yourself become confident, yes, I was handling that properly. That fellow was, you know, ignoring me, that person was disrespecting me, that person was, say, abusing me, but still I was able to maintain the equanimity of the mind. That person was praising me, that person was highlighting me, still I was able to maintain myself in the equanimity. So likewise, so all these different opportunities help us to test ourselves and to refine the mind and to apply our understandings at that moment, and slowly, slowly, it's a kind of a maturing process, and then you become more confident, and then you become more confident not only something external but about your own capacities, about your own practice. So then fairly we can say we are leading towards kind of an unwavering kind of a mind. So it may happen, it may take some time, it may happen. So it's a matter of continuing the path.
Thank you. So so there isn't anything that I should do except to observe it and be aware of it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So observation will give you the understanding. So how they are truly, true nature is. So that understanding will give you more kind of other qualities. So understanding itself will take care of developing the necessary other qualities.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So is it correct that that samadhi is easier when you have self-confidence in your practice? Is that true? Because he confidence as a synonym for samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
That if are not so, if you are not self-confidence, if you have no self-confidence, that will affect your samadhi. Is that correct?
Yeah, we can say so. The thing is, here the samadhi also is a kind of an evolving factor. So at the beginning, we are talking of more on to the kind of focused attention. So you are focusing your attention onto a different phenomena and you are trying to, you know their true nature. But more and more later, so everything become very much like a flux, and now mind become more expanded, maintaining sort of clarity of mind. And when one's mind is further and further dispassionate and released, and then samadhi become, as you said, is kind of maintaining the clarity of the mind. So maintaining awareness in the mind. So there is no crowdedness in the mind. There is no stains in the mind. So it's kind of stainless and free from restlessness. So your mind become more and more stable. So the samadhi is now playing a different role. Rather than focusing attention, now it is very much like maintaining the clarity of the mind. So the stability of the mind. So the stability of the mind and the samadhi is now very much go hand in hand. We can say so, yes.
This is the vipassana samadhi you're talking about?
Very much, yes. Yes, very much like that, yes.
Oh. Okay, thank you very much. That really gives me confidence hearing what you say. Teruan Saranai, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay.
And then may I present the...
Sure. Please go ahead, yeah.
Okay. Respected Bhante, sometimes I crave for something, let's say some specific food or drink which used to give me pleasure in the past. But it doesn't give much satisfaction anymore now. Then they are like two voices inside me. One says, I really want this now. The other voice says, you very well know that it doesn't give it so much pleasure anymore. The main relief when I get what the craving asks for is that the craving voice shut up. Why is they are craving for something that meanwhile gives so little satisfaction? Thank you, Bhante. Teruvan Saranai.
I think that is the conditioning available in our mind, that the we can say very much the traits available in the mind. So previously we were driven by that craving and again victimized to that craving, and we were following the craving. So that kind of a behavior is deeply rooted in our mind. But now you understood there is no such satisfaction, it's a kind of an illusion. You know, factually also you know, but still certain internal influence is coming, asking, urging you for doing something, even though you realistically know, okay, there is no much there. there is no anything, a significant satisfaction is not available. You know very well, but still the influence is coming. So it's kind of you acknowledging that influence, you acknowledging that trait available in the mind, and rather than implementing it or victimizing to it, slowly abandoning it, slowly sort of allowing it to go. And very much like you are taking it to your full awareness and allow it to be. So once it is under your awareness, so it will slowly fade away. So rather than trying to suppress it, or rather than trying to reject it, or rather than trying to follow it, so it's a matter of fully aware of it. So let it come and just be you fully aware of it, and you see it may slowly fade away. So that is the proper approach that we have to take with respect to these kind of inner traits. So we all have those kind of inner traits, and even though we logically and so intellectually understand these things are useless, but still these inner traits are trying to convince us, persuade us to do something. Okay, if there are no more questions, then we can wind up the session. We have spent about 1 hour and 15 minutes. And today also we were able to discuss some Dhamma and try to get some guidance from the Buddha's teaching and participated in a short discussion. So with that, we were able to accumulate some merits. So we'll share these merits with all the celestial beings, all the past away relatives and whoever in need of merits. Wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses to share the merits. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata jamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanang. Akasattha ca bummatta deva naga mahiddika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparang. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamu hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamu hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamu satang samagamu hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.